We conclude our program this morning with Laurie Mercier talking with Mandy Smithberger, who is the director of the Strauss Military Reform Project. They will discuss the recent approval of the largest military budget in U.S. history and how to shrink the Pentagon. Laurie?
Good morning. Mandy Smithberger is director of the Strauss Military Reform Project with the Project on Government Oversight and the Center for Defense Information. She is an expert on Pentagon reform and the defense industry revolving door. Previously as National Security Policy Advisor to U.S. Representative Jackie Speier of California, she worked on passing key provisions of the Military Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act. She appears in many news outlets and most recently co-authored pieces with William Hartung about shrinking the Pentagon that appeared in The Nation and Tom Dispatch. Welcome to KABU, Mandy Smithberger.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's talk about the recent vote in Congress for the National Defense Authorization Act. Despite Trump's claims that he would stop endless wars, he presented Congress with the largest military budget in U.S. history, over $740 billion, without any effort to justify that expenditure, which is consuming a larger and larger share of the federal budget. What's to learn from this vote, which really was bipartisan with overwhelming numbers of Democrats and Republicans supporting it?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple of lessons to take from this vote. I think, you know, the most important thing that we need to look at is the context of when was this vote happening and what was the other major issue that Congress was debating, and that was, what are we going to be doing about COVID relief? And what are we going to be doing to help ordinary Americans? And I think what made the vote in Congress particularly discouraging is that there seemed to be a lot of concerns about expenses when it came to helping ordinary Americans and helping small businesses, but that we weren't holding the Pentagon and its contractors accountable and making sure that we were really sending our money to where it's most needed. I will say with this bill, it is technically a policy bill, not a spending bill. And there were some good provisions in it, including, you know, renaming Confederate bases, some provisions that were addressing shell companies and corruption issues as well. So there were worthy things that were part of this legislation. But I think the real question was, is this really the number one priority for our country right now? And when we look at how many Americans are hurting, I think it's hard to say that with a straight face, but there was clearly a bipartisan consensus to rally around this bill.
Yeah, and we see this every year in Congress, you know, these increasing military budgets despite very few real threats to the United States, given that it spends 10 times as much on the military as any other country in the world. So what perpetuates this system? What explains this repeated bowing down to the Pentagon and military contractors?
So honestly, it's corruption. It's something that President Eisenhower worried or warned us about with the military-industrial complex, that you have Congress seeing defense spending as a jobs program, even though we know that spending in almost any other sector in our economy creates jobs more effectively. We have Pentagon officials who go on to become executives or defense contractors, retired military officers who join the boards of defense contractors, members of Congress who are getting campaign contributions from these defense contractors, and those members going on to become lobbyists. So you have this self-perpetuating system that's making sure that those in the Beltway get richer and not focused on what do we actually need to keep America safe. What do we need to also make sure that our military members get the support that they need? It's only, you know, been in the last couple of years that we saw the scandals with military housing and how horrible the conditions were there. So it's clearly not an issue of not enough money, but it's how that money is being misused and who's benefiting. And I don't think you can say that the military is benefiting, and I don't think you can say America is.
Nearly half of this public money that the U.S. spends is feeding the bottom lines of defense contractors, is it not? Many of these corporations like Lockheed Martin and Boeing have been fined for defrauding the government, yet they still get to line up every year and walk away with billions of dollars. We've heard about the $10,000 toilet seats and these charges that contractors make without any kind of oversight. But what are some other expenditures that are really over the top and can't even be justified by war hawks?
Absolutely. Some of the greatest hits of terribleness have been in Afghanistan, where we've seen millions of dollars for gas stations that were going to be used for other facilities that aren't going to be used. There's this habit that's called use it or lose it, where we've seen big expenditures on crab and lobster dinners. And, you know, with the $10,000 toilet seat kind of example, part of what makes it so frustrating is that even, you know, small spare parts, taxpayers just get ripped off over and over because there's not enough oversight or accountability, and that we've weakened the laws in favor of the defense contractors to such a degree that it has become really hard for us to even recover those expenditures. Our largest weapons program, the F-35, we had to spend another $300 million to address deficiencies in parts that we were given. So we're kind of paying hand over fist for deficient wares.
And with the F-35 jet fighter, didn't that cost almost $2 trillion and never really used?
So it's going to be $1.5 trillion over the lifetime of the program. So that's both for the plane itself and the cost of operating it. We own hundreds of these, and yet testing is not done. And we aren't sure yet if it's going to be effective in combat for what we need it to do, since the program is still in testing. And this is part of a system where the goal is, how can we get these programs going as quickly as possible and not really looking at whether they're going to be meeting the needs that we need, but the point is to get them on contract and make them too big to fail.
And certainly Trump and, both Republicans and Democrats have been demonizing China, Russia, Iran, as part of this effort to kind of create fear in the American public and to help justify these massive expenditures. But really, are there genuine threats from these countries?
I think there are certainly threats from these countries, but I think we need to look at what's the best way to address those threats. You know, obviously, if we were to fight a conventional war with China, I think we would all be in a bad position, and it's hard to imagine how that wouldn't very quickly become a nuclear conflict. And so the idea that we're building up our Navy, that we are building up for these other conventional weapon systems in order to deter China, kind of belies belief. I think when you're looking at Iran, that we need to look at what this administration's approach has been towards diplomacy and the failures there and how that has made our country less safe. And so I think it's important to look at all the tools that we have in our foreign policy toolbox. And the problem is that we've had the Pentagon and the defense contractors calling the shots far too often, and that it's not making us safer.
This is Laurie Mercier for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio. I'm speaking with Mandy Smithberger, director of the Strauss Military Reform Project, with the project on government oversight about the bloated U.S. military budget. Mandy, unfortunately, from the new President Biden's appointments, it does not look like the military budget will be reduced or threatened in any way. And many appointees have been part of this revolving door with industry and in the past have advocated for military expansion. Who do you find most concerning of these appointees and why?
So I'm particularly concerned about the appointment of General Lloyd Austin, retired General Lloyd Austin, for two reasons. One is that he's coming from the board of Raytheon, and he's been working for a number of defense consultancies as well. And so he's really been in the business of how do you make money for these companies and not about how do you keep America safe. And I think particularly after we just had a Raytheon lobbyist as Secretary of Defense, and with so many former contractor executives and leadership roles at the department, it's even more important that we need to reset the course so that they don't continue to have undue influence. And then I'm also concerned that we can't continue to have recently retired military generals leading the department, that it's important to have civilian control and to make sure that we are appropriately balancing our resources. And I think, unfortunately, someone like General Austin is not going to be helping the Pentagon make the kinds of reforms that they need to make.
You know, some of these outrageous weapon systems, I mean, you know, Trump's Space Force and Biden is appointing Michelle Flournoy, who has already insisted that Washington needs to make big bets on manned systems and artificial intelligence. I mean, what's your read on her?
So actually, Michelle Flournoy has not been appointed to anything. We thought that she was going to become Secretary of Defense, but Lloyd Austin ended up being chosen instead. But I think the kinds of ideas that you are hearing from Flournoy are very much what you hear throughout Washington, and the idea that we need to take risks on unproven technology without really thinking about what the downrange impacts are going to be, that it's going to be unaffordable, it's going to be unsustainable, and it's not going to make us more militarily effective. And certainly when you're looking at something like the Space Force, it's clear that their mission is to spend money and that it's not going to make us safer.
Well, how do we break this cycle? And you and William Hartung have this article about shrinking the Pentagon. What are some ways in which we can actually tackle this beast?
Yeah, so I would say cutting the budget significantly is one of the first places that you need to start, that you're going to get much smarter decisions and better management when there are fewer resources, that you're not going to put forward as many risky programs. Certainly strengthening ethics laws and revolving door laws so that people can't instantly become employed by defense contractors after their government service, and to have more transparency over the operations of the department to make sure that independent analysis is made available to the public, things like testing reports for us to see whether weapon systems work. We largely think of what the department buys in terms of weapons, but we also spend a lot of money on people and what's called service contracting, and there are major opportunities for us to save money either by reducing the amount of things that we have them do or bringing some of those jobs in-house. I think we also have opportunities to look at overseas basings and our basing here at home and where we can consolidate and be both more effective and more affordable.
Well, the defense industry has been pretty successful, partly because of locating bases and manufacturing in states all over the country. And in fact, Oregon, where we are, is one of the few places where both senators and most of the representatives have voted against the recent bill. But elsewhere, including California and other places where Democrats dominate, those senators and representatives have been fearful of threatening jobs. But certainly, as you point out, many more jobs could be created in education, in the Green New Deal, other opportunities to use those resources.
Absolutely. And infrastructure is another place where if we were spending more money there, it would be a better job creator and it would help build the whole economy. So I think there are a number of opportunities for us to reorient our priorities. COVID has been awful, but I think it really helps to illuminate how distorted our priorities have been, that we were not in a good position to respond to this public health crisis. And we shouldn't waste this opportunity to reprioritize and make sure that we're doing what's in our best interest to be safe and healthy.
So Mark Pocan of Wisconsin and, of course, Barbara Lee from California and Bernie Sanders have pushed measures in the past to cut Pentagon spending. But even their efforts to cut a mere 10%, just basically taking back the budget to the Obama years, failed. So how do you see any change happening in the future?
So I think one of the most important things is for ordinary citizens to talk to their members of Congress. They hear from the Lockheed Martins and the Boeings of the world about why their programs are important. And I think it's important for the American people to talk about where we think our budget should actually be spent. The polling shows that, you know, most of these politicians are grossly out of touch with where most Americans are and how much money we want to be spending on the Department of Defense. but that message isn't being heard in Washington. And I think it's becoming more and more important for people to actively participate in their democracy and let their leaders know that voting against these kinds of proposals that would shift Pentagon spending to COVID response is not in their best interest.
Yeah, clearly people, when presented the option of either funding weapon systems or public housing or cleaning up the environment or jobs programs or free college education, universal health care, all of those programs would certainly win hands down by majorities. So it's getting these social movements activated and getting people to push the political system to change. Well, thanks very much, Mandy Smithberger, for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour. We'll link to your piece with William Hartung about shrinking the Pentagon that appeared in Tom Dispatch on the Old Mole website. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
Other arms reach out to me. Other eyes smile so tenderly. Still in peaceful dreams, I see that the road leads back to you, Georgia. Georgia.